It is a landmark ruling. The Supreme Court handing down a decision. It was within the context of the January 6th trial or indictment of Donald Trump for trying to change the outcome of the January 6th election. But it has much broader implications than that when it comes to presidential immunity. Basically saying that if it is part of the core constitutional acts and responsibilities of the president, then the president is immune from criminal prosecution, and even outlier, extended duties and responsibilities under the Constitution, that those are presumptively immune as well. So what does that mean if the president should actually break the law within the bounds of his official acts? Watching all of it yesterday and giving some very interesting analysis was Barbara McRae, the former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Michigan, now a professor at the University of Michigan School of Law. Barbara, good morning.
Good morning, Guy. Thanks for having me.
So the president appoints an ambassador, and we find out that that ambassador paid a bribe to the president. It is a core official duty. Is he immune from prosecution?
I think he is, Guy. And, you know, this is where the majority and the dissenters really disagree, I think, in their view of presidential power. The majority wants a fearless and bold president, and the dissenters say, but what about the kings? That's what the founding fathers were worried about. I think the answer is it is immune from prosecution because it's an official act, but I think there is some recourse, and that is impeachment. So if a president should engage in a high crime or misdemeanor, even if he's immune from prosecution, he is not immune from impeachment. So that would be the remedy. Of course, in our very polarized times where it takes two-thirds of the Senate to convict a president, it might be difficult to be able to hold a president accountable. But I think that is the structure that the majority has interpreted.
Barbara, how about the fact that they said you can't consider intent? And as prosecutors, I know prosecutors use that, you know, to determine if they're going to charge someone, what the intent was. How does it play into this situation?
Yeah, I think that part's going to be really tricky. And then, you know who I thought actually had a very insightful opinion that may have gotten a little bit lost in the majority and the dissent was Justice Amy Coney Barrett, who had a concurring opinion. And she pointed out that concern as well as the concern that the majority says you can't even use as evidence anything the president did in his official capacity. So even if the crime itself was something outside his official acts, if he said things or did things within his official capacity, you can't use that. So as a practical matter, it seems like it might be very difficult for a prosecutor to make a case against the president, even outside his official capacity. So, you know, the thing about President Trump has said I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue. The actual shooting would be an unofficial act. Seems like you could prosecute that. But if he made that statement during an official speech, you wouldn't be able to use that statement against him to prove, well, here's his intent. He said he was going to do it, and then he did it. So I think the really interesting cases will be the ones that follow. You know, no doubt this case involving Donald Trump, there will have to be an application of this to the official versus the unofficial acts. And I think there are several unofficial acts in this indictment that will be prosecutable. But no doubt we will see an appeal, and it will go to the Supreme Court again to review that application. And so I think we're going to find out a little more about, you know, how do you make a case where you can't consider motive, you can't consider evidence of things that happened in the official capacity. It really does make it difficult. And I think if the constitutional structure is going to mean anything, we're going to have to restore impeachment to something other than a political tactic.
Justice Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, Ketanji Brown Jackson are saying now there's this law-free zone around a president, and this will have far-reaching effects as we move forward as a country.
Yes, I think their concerns are valid in that they cite some examples about how a president could now literally order SEAL Team 6 to assassinate a rival, and the president could not be convicted of a crime. I do think the president could still be impeached and removed from office and told never to come back again. You know, that is part of the conviction for an impeachment. One question that was left unanswered to me is what about the underlings of a president? So a president may be immune, but how about the members of SEAL Team 6? Could they be prosecuted for a crime? And maybe that's where this comes to an end, because currently when there are considerations of doing things that are close to the line on the law, there are, you know, general counsel for the military. The Department of Defense actually reviews these things and decides whether to bless it or not bless it. And so, you know, the president might be okay in terms of immunity, but if all these other people who would be executing the order are exposed to criminal prosecution, maybe that is the saving grace. And I think, again, we're going to have to figure that out in this case because, for example, there's this whole Justice Department scheme that's part of the indictment where allegedly Donald Trump orders the Justice Department to falsely claim that they have found fraud in the election. And most of the Justice Department says, we'll resign before we'll do that, except one, Jeffrey Clark, who says, I'll do it. Can he be prosecuted? So maybe we get an answer to that question as the case works its way back through the courts.
So what is and isn't what parts of Jack Smith's January 6th indictment now fall by the wayside and what could go forward? It would seem that they suggest that his communications with the DOJ was an official act, therefore yeah. He's granted immunity. But when it comes to, for instance, contacting Senate Majority Leader Mike Shirkey or Speaker of the House Jason Wentworth here in the state of Michigan and saying, hey, you guys need to change the way you're certifying this vote, is it an official act? Is it an unofficial act? And is that still alive in the indictment?
Yes. So that is what the court will now have to do. The Supreme Court has said we're going to remand this down to the lower court for a hearing for the trial judge to figure out which acts fall on which side of the line. My best guess is there are sort of five general schemes in that indictment. I think the scheme regarding the Justice Department that you just discussed is going to be immune from prosecution. That is core constitutional conduct. It's official duty. Even if it is an abuse of official power, I think that is immune from prosecution. They had their shot at impeachment, and that didn't fly, and so I think that's immune. I think the conversations with Mike Pence, where he allegedly was pressured to refuse to certify the outcome of the election, is in that gray zone. They say it is an official act, but it's not core constitutional conduct. So they're going to have to litigate that one. That may be in, may be out. It's presumptively immune, though. So probably an uphill battle, probably out. But I think the rest is in, because in those roles, Donald Trump was acting as a candidate and not as the president. The president does not have a role in elections and in campaigning. So pressuring Mike Shirkey, pressuring the Secretary of State of Georgia, organizing false slates of electors. I think those kinds of schemes are probably left in play. But of course, because you can't use as evidence anything that the president did in his official capacity, that probably does eliminate some of the evidence Jack Smith had planned to use. But I think I'd say 3/5 of the case, it remains alive.
So do you believe that the president now has a superpower? And, you know, that doesn't to me seem like what the founding fathers had, you know, written about in the 18th century.
Yeah, what I worry about is the abuse of official power. So, you know, the president does need to have kind of a wide lane to act when he is executing his official power. And so I understand that we don't want, every successor to be able to prosecute a president for, you know, every good faith mistake that he made. Mm-hmm. But that's where, you know, for police officers, we offer what's called qualified immunity, which means as long as you acted in good faith and you thought you were doing something right, even if it turns out later you used excessive force or you had bad judgment, you are immune from liability. And the exception there, why it's qualified, is if the person knowingly violates a known legal right, that becomes actionable. And so we're saying the president doesn't have that kind of qualified immunity. It's absolute immunity. And so I worry about that and how you reconcile that with the other clause in the Constitution says that the president shall take care that the laws be faithfully executed. That's what the language that the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals kind of hung its hat on, that you can't have someone whose job it is to ensure that the laws be faithfully executed running around violating them. That would seem inconsistent with the intent of the founding fathers. But I guess where we're left is there is still some tool, and that is impeachment. So just like every other citizen, a president must comply with all of the laws in his unofficial duties. But because the president has this special status as president when he's performing official duties, he's immune from criminal prosecution. The only remedy we have, I guess there are two remedies. One is impeachment, and we need to make sure that really works, that 2/3 right. of the Senate acts in good faith and not just in their own political interests. And then I guess voting, you know, voting matters a lot, making sure that the person we put in the White House is someone we trust not to violate the law.
Barbara McQuaid, a lot of it yet to be decided at the district and appellate level. And I guess we may have to temper our thinking on this until that becomes clearer. Thanks so much for your insights. We always appreciate talking to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Barbara McQuaid at the University of Michigan School of Law. Coming up, NHL free agency opens. How did the Wings do? Any big moves from Stevie Yzerman? We'll talk to Steve Courtney at 8:49 on JR Morning.